Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case for argument is Nunez-Morone against Holder. Mr. Fernandez will be arguing by speakerphone. Mr. Fernandez.
Good morning, Your Honor. And good morning, Chief Judge Easterbrook and members of the honorable panel. My name is Floyd Fernandez of Ventura, California, and I represent the petitioner in this case, Gustavo Nunez-Morone of Burton, California. He was here due to his brief residence with his family in the Chicago area during the period of 2005 to 2008, during which time the final immigration order was issued, which caused venue to reside with this court, before he had returned to California, where he has lived for the remainder of the 20-plus years he has lived in the U.S. To go to the factual background of the case, for the sake of time, I leave most of it to the briefs and to the record. However, I will touch upon the most notable part of the record that is in dispute, and that is the basis upon which he is here. The government relies upon the expedited removal order that was made on September 24, 1999, after he was found to be reentering the country after his earlier removal, claiming to be another individual and showing a false document. However, his initial departure was by expedited removal on September 15, 1999, which followed a misdemeanor domestic assault conviction in Santa Barbara, California. And it is shown that way in the record in the final disposition of the case in Santa Barbara County, in which it is noted that he was placed under the hold of INS, of Legacy INS. So it is undisputed on the record that Mr. Nunez was removed from the United States on September 15, 1999, which moves forward to am I asking the court's indulgence to proceed to the dominant issues in this case, and one of the most important of which turns upon Legacy INS failure to follow its own binding regulations in the removal of Petitioner Nunez. HCFR Section 235.3B3 states that when an alien establishes continuous presence physically within the U.S. for a minimum of 2 years prior to the date of determination of an invisibility, then the alien is not to be subject to expedited removal, but to be remanded to detention for formal proceedings under 8 U.S.C. 1229B. Now, while 8 U.S.C. 1225B2 and HCFR 235.3B3 holds the alien has the burden to prove to show continuous presence, it is necessary for the alien to be first told he must do so, at least, or else due process under Zadavidis v. Davis by the Supreme Court is violated. The most rudimentary examination that could have been given by an immigration enforcement officer of Legacy INS in September of 99 would included the simple question, now that we know who you are, how long have you lived in the United States? For since his fingerprints had been taken, a simple run check of his fingerprints on National Registry would have produced proof that neither the card he carried or the name he gave INS officers initially was correct, but his own name would have been produced, a name of which they were aware nearly 9 days before. And that failure to determine that simple fact and proceed therefrom, we contend, leaves them at that point acting without legal authority to proceed with expedited removal of Mr. Nunez to anything other than formal proceedings before an immigration judge, which could have resulted in any number of circumstances that would have followed. We're not simply saying that Mr. Nunez's prior expedited removal was merely improper and invalid. 1225B2, as well as 1231A5 on reinstatement, cuts off legal review of the validity of the removal order, save with an appropriate habeas petition under 1252B. Rather, we are urging the court to find this order of expedited removal by the government to be void without jurisdictional foundation, that they were not entitled by law to proceed with expedited removal because they were, and especially so, that they were aware of the domestic assault charge and are therefore stopped to enforce expedited removal. Doing so frees Mr. Nunez under 1229, 8 U.S.C. 1229B, to maintain his reentry on December 1st, 1999, the Nunez presence under the 90-day rule of 1229B, allowing the pursuit of cancellation of removal. The next issue that we tackle is that the government alleges that upon reentry into the country in December 1999, his expedited removal of September 24th was possessed of a trigger mechanism that upon Mr. Nunez's reentry proceeded to constitute automatic reinstatement of his previous expedited removal under Section 1131A5, and in doing so, cut off two critical avenues of relief for him. His ability to claim non-pro-tunk relief to the expedited removal and illegal reentry that occurred under 1182A9CI with a Section I-212 waiver, which is allowed him under 8 CFR 212.2. And second, his ability to claim that his father's approved I-130 petition in February of 1998, which was grandfathered to him through his wife's own approved petition later as a U.S. citizen, allows him the ability to adjust status under 8 U.S.C. 1255I under the Life Act of 2000, commonly known as 245I. In doing so, the respondent government relies upon this court's precedent of Gonzalez-Banderas v. Holder, and in turn the BIA conflict of laws interpretation in matter of Briones and progeny, to urge the court to maintain that after a prior petition and adjustment after expedited removal and illegal reentry is trumped by reinstatement of the previous removal. However, the government's argument fails on both or two fronts, and yet allows the court to hold with Petitioner Nunez without a set-aside or threat to Gonzalez-Balderas precedent. One, the petitioner here already was eligible for 1255I relief due to an already approved I-130 petition by his father. That did not exist in Gonzalez-Balderas. And secondly, that the very removal of petitioner, unlike in Gonzalez-Balderas, was again without legal authority and void. More importantly, petitioner maintains that the automatic trigger mechanism of Section 1131A5 did not attach automatically. In fact, we assert that there is no automatic trigger mechanism at all, but rather reinstatement must be imposed through a formal motion to dismiss a subsequent proceeding. DHS itself understood that to be the case through its actions when it attempted to reopen the case with the BIA and then gained dismissal of the proceedings in December 2011. The motion was denied on other grounds, but DHS showed by its action that its assertion of automatic reinstatement is incorrect. Next, we assert that the immigration judges and the BIA erred in determining that Sections 1225B2 and 1131A5 held binding priority over the Life Act's 1255I savings clauses due to the language that emanates from the determination of the Lemus Loza case by this court in 2009, which relied upon the administrative determinations of the BIA in matter of Briones and its progeny in 2007. In doing so, this court relied upon the principles of statutory construction enunciated by the Supreme Court in Chevron USA, Inc. It held that the conflict of statutes here went to 1225 and 1231 over sections 1255I due to what they held to be a proper deference to the Briones and progeny determination, that the clash between the two sets of provisions creates an ambiguity, and therefore the reviewing court should grant due deference to the administrative body's interpretation.
Mr. Fernandez, you have a little less than 1 minute remaining.
Okay. Well, then let me go ahead and conclude this. The government's analysis herein fails on three fronts. The language of the Supreme Court of the National Cable case stated Ben Lemus Loza said that administrative pronouncements cannot arbitrarily contradict the language of the statutes involved, nor ignore classical last of time construction rules. Briones et al. Ignored the clear legislative history allowing the Attorney General to continue non-pro-tunk review under the Violence Against Women Act to be pursued under 8 CFR Section 212.2. And three, as stated by the Tenth Circuit in Padilla-Cadera, the very purpose of the Life Act was to act within the reach of 1182A to limit its reach by adopting the limiting term except as otherwise provided in this section when listing classes of inadmissible aliens. Finally, we assert that even if Chevron U.S.
Thank you, Mr. Fernandez. Mr. Fernandez, your time has expired. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. We ask the court for relief as the prayer petition. We thank you for your time.
Thank you. Mr. Goring.
Good morning. May it please the court. Alex Goring on behalf of the government. Your Honors, this case involves Mr. Nunez's challenge to the Board of Immigration's decision concluding that he had failed to establish eligibility for adjustment of status and cancellation of removal, given his September 24, 1999 expedited removal from the United States. Here, the Board, consistent with its own precedent, the precedent of this court, and the precedent of every other court to consider the issue, reasonably concluded that Mr. Nunez was ineligible for adjustment because he was inadmissible under 8 U.S.C. 1182A9 CIII as an alien who had reentered the United States after having previously been removed. Now, opposing counsel has made a number of statements which I would like to clarify what I believe the record actually reflects. First of all, there is no evidence whatsoever in this record of a September 15, 1999 expedited removal order. Before I get there, I want to point out that this court also would lack, even if there was, would lack jurisdiction to consider the propriety of any expedited removal order. Pursuant to 8 U.S.C. 1252A2A, which holds that no court has jurisdiction to review the propriety of an expedited removal order, the only exception being pursuant to 8 U.S.C. 1252E, which provides for a limited review in the district court. That's what the statute states. This court's precedent in Kahn holds as much. So as such, counsel's challenges to the expedited removal order are improper.
What's the benefit of an expedited removal? There's a benefit there.
To the government, Your Honor?
No, to the person that's being removed. At least there are people who seem to want to get under that umbrella and without having a lot of going with it. I don't know. Tell me what an expedited removal is versus a normal removal.
An expedited removal involves it's usually at a border. And in this case, Mr. Nunez was attempting to enter the United States on September 24th using a false green card of someone else. The inspectors found that it was false. They, pursuant to the District of Columbia court case, they interviewed him with an interpreter. They did run his fingerprints, actually. They then asked him, he under oath, he provided another false name. He was specifically asked, had he ever been in the United States before? And said no. They ran his background check. Again, the FBI rap sheet's in the record. There is no September 15th, 1999 expedited order of removal.
If there were an expedited removal
previously, it would have shown up on when they ran his fingerprints. And in fact, his fingerprints from the September 24th, 1999 expedited removal are in as part of this record, Your Honor. They're all in pages 220 to 234. The whole packet from the September 24th, 1999 expedited removal. He specifically was asked, have you been in the United States before? He said no. So even if this court did have jurisdiction to consider this, counsel's assertions are unsupported by anything in the record. In fact, the pages he cites in the record to say there was a September 15th expedited removal order reference the September 24th removal. There was nothing on September 15th other than his criminal conviction, which, by the way, contrary to the statements in his briefs, was not the grounds why he was expeditedly removed. He was convicted in criminal court in California, left the United States at an unknown date for unknown reasons, and was caught attempting to enter the United States on September 24th using false documents. That's actually what the expedited removal was based upon, that he was an alien who was attempting to enter the United States, who had not proven that he had been here for at least 2 years previously, who was attempting to enter using false documents, which is 1182A6CI, and also he had no proper documents, which is 1182A7AI. So, again, even if this court had jurisdiction to consider the issue, which I believe the statute and this court's binding case law make perfectly clear it does not, counsel's assertions are incorrect and belied by the record. If I may proceed, Your Honor.
The effort to enter with false documents would be a criminal violation, wouldn't it?
It would, but in this case...
And expedited removal eliminates any consideration of that. Just
correct. Basically, what expedited removal does is allow the immigration officer to consider the alien circumstances when they run the background check, and then if they haven't established to that officer's unreviewable discretion that they haven't been here for 2 years, they simply turn them around and remove them. And that's precisely what happened in this case, Your Honor. They do not get to go before a judge. They're not put in 240 removal proceedings. It's just a turnaround at the border, and they are removed. But it is a formal process where there is a sworn statement in the record. There are documents. There is actually an order of expedited removal contained in this record. It's a formalized process before an immigration inspector, Your Honor. However, that is dispositive of Mr. Nunez's case because he's seeking adjustment of status, and this court's case law in Gonzalez-Balderas holds that an alien such as Mr. Nunez, who has been subject to such an order, cannot be granted adjustment under 245I. That's what Gonzalez-Balderas holds. The facts of this case, except for Mr. Nunez's criminal record, which didn't play a part in any of this, are identical to this court's decision in Gonzalez-Balderas. I would also note that every other court to have considered the issue has ruled as much. As for cancellation of removal, petitioner's counsel effectively conceded in his brief that if the expedited removal order is present, it breaks his chain of continuous presence because he has to show he has been here at least 10 years uninterrupted. This court has held, as have other courts, that an expedited removal order breaks that chain of continuous presence. Counsel doesn't dispute this. Instead, he, in a roundabout way, attempts to challenge the validity of the expedited removal order, which is improper, but this court's binding case law holds that such an expedited removal bars him from cancellation of removal. As such, the board provided two independently dispositive grounds for denying his case. The board did also issue a third reasoning, which counsel addressed, which was the reinstatement order. It's the government's position that this court doesn't even need to reach that issue, given that binding case law makes clear he's ineligible for the forms of relief that he's eligible for. If the court does reach it, the government would respectfully request that the case be remanded to allow the board to reconsider their unpublished decision in that matter because they failed to account for the factual distinction between the cases they relied upon, Lino and Lateeb, and the facts in this case, because in those cases, the reinstatement order, which provides a separate bar to relief, independent of the ones I've already discussed, here the reinstatement order was not formally reinstated. And in Lino and Lateeb, both of those cases, it had been. Although the language in those cases suggests that it may not be necessary, the board didn't account for that factual distinction. But again, Your Honors, given that this court's binding case law provides independently dispositive grounds for denying Mr. Nunez's applications for relief, the government thinks that it's not necessary to reach the third reason. If the court has no further questions for me, Your Honors, I will rest on the briefs.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honors.
The case is taken under advisement.
Good morning. Hello.